Hello and welcome to the Guardian Film Show, back from its Easter break to run through the week's big releases. We're making tracks, we're possibly making an exhibition of ourselves and hopefully achieving a form of transcendence along the way. It's almost as if the film titles are writing our script for us. Coming up on this week's show, the British filmmaker Joanna Hogg leads us inside a modernist house to show us the modernist people. And elsewhere, there's Mia Wasikowska padding clean across Australia in John Curran's fact-based salute to the indomitable spirit of adventure. First up, it's Transcendence, a high-concept sci-fi blockbuster produced by Christopher Nolan, in which the world ends not with a bang, not with a whimper, but with a digitized Johnny Depp who uploads his own brain.
The path to building superintelligence requires us to unlock the most fundamental secrets of the universe. Imagine a machine with a full range of human emotion. Its analytical power will be greater than the collective intelligence of every person in the history of the world.
Citizens, take heed. Technology can be bad as well as good. Exhibit A is Johnny Depp's brainiac boffin, who starts off as a dopey, good-natured hippie and then morphs into a megalomaniac digital hologram who wants to rule us all. Morgan Freeman, Rebecca Hall, and Paul Bettany look on with mounting alarm.
Will's body is dying, but his mind is a pattern of electrical signals. We can upload his consciousness. We can save him.
Not like this. Assuming that this works, if we missed anything, a thought, a childhood memory, how will you know who you're dealing with?
I'm joined now by Peter Bradshaw and Catherine Shaw. Peter, before we proceed, clear up a mystery. Is this real Depp or digital Depp?
I'm not sure. I think it's supposed to be real Depp, although this distinction between the two is slightly elusive. This film is based on the idea that Johnny Depp is very, very clever. Mm. He is a very, very plausible and convincing super brain box. And like all mathematical and computer geniuses in films, he covers absolutely acres of wall space and blackboard space with equations and so on and so forth, which is the well-understood signifier for cleverness. And he is not at all convincing as a clever person. He just looks so kind of stupid, frankly. He looks like he's kind of zonked out. Mm. He looks like he's been smoking a lot of weed in a way that Johnny Depp can make look charming in certain contexts. But here he just looks very supercilious and self-involved. And he frankly looks detached from the person who is supposed to be his life partner and soulmate, played by Rebecca Hall. It's not clear that Johnny Depp realises he's supposed to be married to her, right, to be honest with you. They look very, very distinct. Really, it is quite odd. So you have to buy into the idea that he's this genius, and the idea of him uploading this mighty consciousness of his, this fantastically enigmatic and magnetic personality, is in itself a hugely fascinating act. Whereas you just think, you've got to be joking. It sounds like, you know, you could upload it into the kind of computers they had for those two-hander games of Pong in the 1970s. It just looks it looks implausible, to say the least.
Catherine, did you love it as much as Peter?
I didn't, you know, I didn't hate watching it. It's fantastically boring and awful and doesn't make any sort of sense. And the casting's terrible. Mm. Johnny Depp's very puffy. And although I think that casting's sort of odd, it's also kind of on the button, because we've seen Johnny Depp do this kind of slightly sinister, perhaps duplicitous scientist thing before. And Rebecca Hall is kind of paranoid in the same way she is. And the Morgan Freeman character is played by Morgan Freeman.
Yeah.
And you have all that sort of thing. And you know, it's sort of.
And Paul Bettany is his kind of
mind. Terrible role as well. He really does to swallow it as well.
But Lucas Haas, he gets one line.
Lucas Haas, that's a terrible thing, isn't
terrible,
it?
Yeah,
Lucas Haas, what a terrible career.
Is there a sense that these people are all kind of imitations of life then, if they're all a bit unconvincing and shonky?
That's an interesting theory, Zen. Maybe it's a bit more meta than we thought.
Okay.
I think where this film falls down is not just in the sort of dreadful plot and the terrible acting and the awful script, is that you'd think that the special effects would kind of redeem it and the vision and the sort of Inception-ish kind of shot of it. But the fact is that the special effects, well, there's the kind of thing where people are healed, but that's just running film backwards. And I mean, I could do that.
Yeah.
And then there's the thing where people get super strength and so they can lift up massive great iron pipes. But then you think, well, it's a film, so the props obviously can make a perfectly mashing.
That's so boring as well. I mean, it's like a very humorless version of Her, Spike Jonze's film about consciousness and artificial intelligence. It was much more interesting and witty and had a lightness of touch, which this completely doesn't have. It doesn't have the idea that the important idea for, let's say, a kind of 70s-era sci-fi, that it should be subversive and funny and witty. It's absolutely none of those things. And like so many kind of inception-y films about consciousness, it degenerates into a very boring, old-fashioned, real-world kind of showdown, like the Matrix Revolutions, like just a great big war, which isn't really all that interesting.
Evelyn.
Oh, my God.
I can't feel anything.
I'm here.
You need to get me online. I need more power.
It may be intelligent, it may even be sentient. This is not well.
Shut it down.
Shut it down? It's him!
Your friends crossed the line. They don't know the danger.
This is astounding.
So how do we fight it?
You can't. An AI is like any intelligence. It has needs.
The real will die.
It'll start to evolve.
Where's the machine?
To influence. Perhaps the entire world.
A hologram of idiocy and a whole upload of rubbish. That's Johnny Depp in Transcendence. Now, let's head back to the real world through the streets of West London to the middle-class house that forms the centrepiece of Joanna Hogg's new film, Exhibition. Except that this place, if anything, looks even more alien. Joanna Hogg's haunting elliptical study of lives in the balance leads us through the door and up the spiral staircase to spotlight two affluent artists on the brink of flight. Change is coming, they're about to move. But Hogg frames them in limbo and lets us watch from a distance.
It's not about wanting to, it's the fact that we can. We have time, we can do something. We can build something. We've got possibilities, you know? We should do it while we can.
Catherine, I know we've been big fans of Joanna Hogg's work in the past with Unrelated, her first film, and then Archipelago. Does this third one measure up?
Well, it presents one with an interesting conundrum because, you know, I've spent a lot of the last 4 or 5 years defending Hogg, and I love her. I love the coolness, I love the detachment, I love the uncompromising vision, I love the performances, I love the way it's shot and scripted, and I hate performance art. Mm-hmm. And this film blends those. And so, and it is harder to justify your average Joe going along. You know, a lot of, I've given those films, earlier films, to a lot of people and told them to watch them. And some people have loved them and some people have hated them and hated me for loving them. And this, it is harder to justify why, you know, people would get into it.
There was more dramatic motor, I guess, in the first two films.
There was. This is a bit more installation-y, in a very self-conscious, you know, it is consciously like that. I liked it. I did like it. I think it's fascinating. I think there's something really interesting going on here. I'm not sure what, and I need to see it again to understand that. However, I would think more carefully before recommending it, I'm afraid. It doesn't quite have the fascination and the sort of drama of her earlier films, I think.
It's a kind of haunted house story, isn't it,
Peter?
It's kind of haunted by the ghosts of the living and these weird traumas that you only obliquely referred to.
I think so. I think it's absolutely brilliant. I love it. I know exactly what Catherine means, and you've got to be careful about recommending it to people before they realise that it's not a film in the normal sense of the word. You recommend it in the same spirit that you might, as it were, recommend an exhibition of, say, video art or installations at Tate Modern or something like that. And yet, once you've become acclimatised to it, there is something absolutely mesmeric, especially about the way the film gradually puts you inside her mind, the character played by Vev Albertine. increasingly, Joanna Hogg is suggesting that she is an agoraphobic, she is disturbed in some quite serious way, and that her behaviour is not simply the wayward and affected bohemianism that you might otherwise think. You certainly might think if this was a conventional satire, but that there's something dysfunctional and traumatised about her, and that she's working it through, but again, in this very tacit way. It's a fascinating film. It doesn't really remind me of any other films, except possibly Michael Haneke's Hidden, couple have the same fantastically grand house, barricaded in this fantastically grand house, and yet they're not there in the classic Michael Haneke way. They're not there to be tortured or lacerated or punished in any way, but they are there to be inspected, but they're not there to be satirised. I found myself thinking about other works of art, really. I found myself thinking of Rachel Whiteread and David Hockney. It's like a classic Hockney kind of portrait, a kind of haute bourgeois portrait from the
study
from
of
the
90s. Surface.
Yeah, that sort of thing, and Mr. and Mrs. Clarke and that sort of thing from the 70s.
Peter's teasing a lot of the stuff out of this with presumably quite a lot of heavy lifting. Do you think the film should kind of just speak to people and include them? And does this film do that for you?
I don't know. But no, I don't think film should do that. I like the uncompromising thing. And I like what Joanna Hogg thinks about places and people's relationship to places. And that was strong in her first movie and much, much stronger in her second. You know, this is absolutely the work of the same person. I didn't identify with either character in this. And I think there are more characters in her earlier films and they are more sympathetic. And it is hard to get in the heads of these people, even though it's in many ways the story of two freelancers working in a house together,
yes,
which is obviously a nightmare.
two very wealthy freelancers who don't need to earn money, of course.
That kind of bugged me a little bit, the fact that this is just isn't touched upon at all.
It's
they're
not,
just fabulously
there are
wealthy,
lots of things. They must be fantastically wealthy. I mean, they really are, at least as it were in Hidden, they were people who were earning a living, whereas these people are very, very wealthy. And again, that brought me to the brink of being exasperated. But even there, I found myself intrigued by it. The mystery of their existence is maintained, and to a certain extent, of course, we are locked out of it. Mm. What exactly is going on in the first place? Because selling a house, that is the most boring and workaday thing in your life. It should be, in a way, the most realist thing. And yet, it absolutely isn't. It's transformed into something else, into a kind of performance art piece in itself, of course. And that title, it's so perplexingly inert. Exhibition. It is in itself an exhibition. The house is in some non-narrative sense an exhibition space.
That you stand outside.
That you stand outside and you look in through one of those colossal panes of modernist glass and look at this.
And
this
the direction thing. is shooting people from behind. From our
blank,
angle. So we're
locked
kind of just
off camera space. Yes.
And,
The same middle distance sound design that she had in the last movie. Not so much in the first one, but the sense of standing behind a glass and sort of listening in. Not that we can't hear it, but definitely that we're not included in it. All those things, I get it. It infuriates people. It's pretentious and nonsense and the emperor has no clothes. I get it. And yet it is also utterly mesmeric for me, utterly involving. And after a while, but you have to kind of drift into it and realign.
Actually come off or ever? This thing.
The mysterious whispering gallery that is Joanna Hogg's exhibition. High time we stepped outside and got some air. Here's Mia Wasikowska as the writer Robin Davidson. She's walking out of Alice Springs and she won't be stopping until she reaches the ocean. The world is her oyster, the camels her co-stars. And here she is talking to The Guardian's Paul McInnes.
I am planning to walk across the Australian desert from Alice Springs to the Indian Ocean, a distance of 2,000 miles. When people ask me why I'm doing it, my usual answer is why not?
I could completely understand the desire to kind of remove yourself from the more conventional society and put yourself in an environment where you took things back to the basics of survival, like just putting one foot in front of the other and attending to your needs in the moment. Like very simple needs like eating and having drinking water and finding shelter. It seemed like a very understandably desirable thing.
You want to die out there or something? And smile? Great.
Are we done? Particularly now, just by being, by virtue of being so kind of connected, we are, yeah, it's, you know, hard to be more present with so many sort of distractions and things like that.
And I suppose a similar thing, well, I'm going to suggest it's a similar yeah. thing, is that we've also lost touch with an idea of wilderness.
Yeah.
Of being in a physical space where nothing happens or is cultivated.
Right, yeah, for sure. And I think also similarly, we sort of are unaware how our we are kind of like slightly more oblivious to how our surroundings kind of impact us.
Peter, I saw this at the Venice Film Festival last year and there's a huge amount of love for it, which I didn't quite get.
I know what you mean. It is a very lovable film and Mia Wasikowska is very good in it. Mm. She's very ingenuous and heartfelt and she's absolutely convincing in the role. I really did believe that she personally was trekking 1,700 miles across the burning plain of Western Australia. I absolutely believed in it. And I liked her very respectful relationship with Roly Mantuma, the Native Australian, Indigenous Australian actor who plays the elder who guides her across sacred land. There was a sense in which, okay, it's a journey, and like all kind of Hollywood or reality TV show journeys, it's got to tell you something about her.
Yeah.
And her backstory is that she has a very fraught family crisis, which unfolds in flashback in the traditional manner as she gets closer and closer to her goal. I'm not sure where we're going with it, though. It's a bit shallow, really. But it's a nice film, it's a great-looking movie, and Mia Wasikowska is very good in it.
You wanted this film to explain more, and yet Exhibition choosing not to explain was fine.
Well, Exhibition chose not to explain in any conventional way. It sort of sidled up in a sort of mysterious way to the enigmatic heart of its conundrum and so on. Trax is a very, very conventional yeah. looking movie. And it's a likeable movie. It might turn out to be a big word of mouth hit because it's kind of a night's move away from the kind of movies that are making money than the likes of Transcendence, which is very straight. And this has the kind of real world kind of Polaroidy tang to it, which I
and
like.
And a sort of feminist kind of subtext,
kind
which
of
again,
feminist
doesn't really go into.
Doesn't go into it very much. It's one of these. One of these movies where you kind of had to be there in a way.
It's like backpacker having a gap year. But,
yeah.
but like a typical middle class backpacker saying, I'll write about it and earn some money.
And then she does. I'd want to read Trax. I mean, it's a book with a real cult following. And the people who do admire Robin Davidson, that she is in a classic tradition of soul women travellers who have to spend a lot of energy kind of seeing off people who are patronising them as eccentric. And of course, they sort of are eccentric in a way, but no more eccentric than men travellers or anybody wanting to travel because it is there for the sheer hell of it. And maybe it has to be seen in tandem with the book.
You won't find a drop of water. It'll be 2 months travel in a dead straight track through empty desert. It's lucky to get 6 cars a year along it.
I'll be fine.
Would it make any difference if I told you I didn't want you to go alone?
What do you think?
Well, I think you have a problem with people.
The solitary odyssey of Robin Davidson there, accompanied by camels and a dog and a local guide and a photographer for National Geographic magazine. That's it from us. We've walked our path and reached our ocean. My thanks to travelling companions Peter Bradshaw and Catherine Short. We're back next week.